investigate the meteor, if indeed that is what it is.
Oh, ooh.
It's a rock that bleeds.
Now that's peculiar.
It's too amazing to even contemplate it. It's like they're evolving.
Our little babies seem to be growing up.
I hope they don't make it to puberty.
There's a bug in my suit!
You're all sealed up, that's impossible!
Don't tell me I'm sealed up, I know there's a bug in my...
Ooh. How are you going in?
I might be able to catch it in his colon. All right, flip it!
I'll get the lubricant.
There's no time for lubricant.
There's always time for lubricant!
This summer...
Is there some sort of alien attack happening here?
Have a nice end of the world. Evolution.
Good Gugga Mugga.
Come on, cutie pie.
David Duchovny, Orlando Jones, Sean William Scott.
Awesome!
And Academy Award nominee, Julianne Moore.
Oh. I'm okay. I'm okay.
Uh-oh. Time to go!
Evolution.
So what do you want? Lightly or dark?
You have to ask?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I am your host, Scott White, and I am joined once again by Mr. Will Fordyce.
Hello, hello.
Will. Now, Will chose this movie. We are looking at the 2001 movie Ghostbusters. I mean, Evolution. Not Ghostbusters at all. Has nothing to do. Does not have the same exact beats. Almost the same exact cast. Has nothing to do with the 1984 blockbuster Ghostbusters. It's the 2001 movie Evolution.
Oh, boy.
Directed by Ivan Reitman and starring David Duchovny, Orlando Jones, Sean William Scott, and Julianne Moore, with a cameo by Dan later in the movie.
Oh, yeah. And I'm glad I picked this one because some friends were talking about it, and I brought up your podcast, and they were like, oh, yeah, Dan Aykroyd's in this movie and that movie, so... thanks to Snoozefest for recommending it as well, because it's in my opinion a good movie.
Well, that's where we differ.
Okay.
So I found this movie just like I said, it's just almost a beat for beat movie of Ghostbusters.
Uh huh.
And with just a less interesting cast.
Ooh.
But we'll get into it. The movie starts with Sean. Well, it starts with a meteor in space, and I'm going to say right now that I'm not going to hold the CGI against this movie. This for 2001, the CGI for this movie is fine. It hasn't aged all that well. Some of it has, some of it hasn't. But all I'm saying is I'm not going to hold that against it. They did the best they could with the CGI they had for the time.
Yeah.
That's going to be a non-factor in me reviewing this movie.
Oh, goodness. But please do express your opinion as we go, and then we'll just calculate the points at the end. But I did like the opening scene because it was reminiscent of like Star Wars with the big asteroid flying towards Earth. Like, we're already getting into it. There was no buildup. It's just like stuff's happening.
It's the exact same opening as The Thing and The Predator.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, except those were spaceships and not asteroids. Okay, we're talking about beat for beat. This is the equivalent of the little old lady finding the ghost in the library in New York. This is Sean William Scott, and I have not seen the American Pie movies. I don't know if you have.
Some of them.
Apparently, this is the character he plays, a high-energy, not-too-bright character, and he does it in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And he is training to be a firefighter. So he is out in the middle of nowhere. He has built this shack and has taken this dummy out there and has set the shack on fire and to rescue the dummy. So he is simulating this because he has a firefighter test the next morning.
Yeah. I thought, I mean, I thought it was a good character introduction because it's actiony. There's lighting stuff on fire. He's, you know, he does have his character type, but he plays it strong and here, and just it seemed like a fun opening to like introduce this dummy.
Right, and the opening was fun because the meteor hits his car, and there is an epic explosion. Somehow they threw an actual car. This was not a model. This was an actual car that went flying through the air.
Okay. Like they launched it and flipped it.
They launched it and flipped it somehow, and it looked, and that looked good, yeah.
So, yeah.
And then we cut to a college where Bill Murray, I mean, David Duchovny, is...
I see what we're doing here.
Okay, so we cut to a university where David Duchovny or an Orlando Jones are working, a la we cut to the university where Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd were working. And we cut to David Duchovny's... Wasn't this around when X-Files was on television?
Wasn't it after? I mean, this is... I thought it was a little bit after.
But it might have been, at
its height.
No, this was not at its height. I think this was when they were trying to make David Duchovny a movie star, or he was trying to transaction from television star into movie star. And I don't know if it's his acting or if it's his personality, but he is just a blank slate through the whole movie. He never shows any emotion one way or the other. He is just the complete same when the aliens are attacking or when he's having lunch. He has the same expression on his face.
He's not a dry scientist because he plays around and stuff, but he's very, I guess he rides the middle rail, so to speak. There's not too much that you get from him. But when you see David Duchovny, at least in my mind, when he's doing that stuff, like he has some quips and he has some stuff, but yeah, he's not super expressive. He's just him and very like, yeah, right down the middle.
He's teaching at a community college. I guess they're trying to convey that he doesn't give a shit because he's like, everybody gets an A, except for these two fat, dumb guys who get a C-. Geology class,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about cells, but the two fat dumb guys think they're talking about prison cells. So he gives them a C-.
I've seen the bigger guy. I forget his name, but he was in My Name Is Earl, and he's in Blow with Johnny Depp, and he's in a couple of like things. I've seen him before as well. But yeah, you're right. It's like the teacher's just handing out grades to everybody because he's done, and the two idiots are happy with their C. I mean, maybe it's because I saw the movie already, but I thought it was a fun setup because these two low status characters. I don't want to, you know, spoiler alert, but later in the movie they become significant.
And then we cut to Orlando Jones, who gets a phone call about a meteor falling. Do we ever find out who has called him?
Not that I recall. No, I don't. I don't think so.
We get that he is a teacher as well, and a female student wants a better grade, so she is wondering what extra credit. So this scene just reminded me of the beginning scene of Ghostbusters when Bill Murray is doing an experiment and he is seducing.
There's just
so many parallels between this movie and I know Ivan Reitman directed both, and I don't know who wrote this. So that's that scene. And David Duchovny walks in and he's like, you ready for lunch or have you already had lunch? And these two professors are okay with having sex with a student to give her a better grade. They're both, you can tell by the eye contact. They're perfectly okay. He's perfectly okay with sleeping with this student.
So yeah.
She can get a better grade and he can get laid.
Yeah, because she's like, I think she breaks it down to him and she's like, listen, I'm just going to be Miss Alabama. I forget what she says. I think it's Alabama.
Arizona.
Excuse me. Yeah, I'm going to be Miss Arizona, so I don't really need this grade. I just need to get it to where it looks good enough on paper. So, but yeah, they're and that kind of like this scene sets up. It makes the a little bit later his other job look a little more cringy.
And what he says after that makes it a little more cringy as well, even though he is joking at one point.
Yeah, what can you remind me what he said? I forgot the exact line because I remember they're going out and they're they meet up and they're like, oh, I got some big news, and he does that because they after the school scene they drive out there, don't they?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you. Well, when we get to the scene, I'll tell you the cringy. You know,
oh,
cringy
gotcha.
Line.
Okay.
So they drive out there and they pass themselves off as we get the typical dumb cops. Who don't know what they're doing, and they pass themselves off as being with the Environmental Protection Agency or the Geology Agency. They pass themselves off as being with the government.
Orlando Jones, I think, has a certificate that makes him a geological study expert or reporter.
Right, which he got by over the internet.
Yeah.
Which he said, yeah, I got it over my computer. And okay, so I'm going to address this right now. Orlando Jones plays the SBC, the sassy black character.
Mm, gotcha. Yeah.
It's just like there was this time in the movies where every black sidekick had to be this sassy, always had one-liners, always had to say this, always had to say that. The one thing that is different between this movie and Ghostbusters is the Ernie Hudson,
mm-hmm.
his character, he is not a sassy.
He's just a person.
He's just a person. The fact that he's black is insignificant. We get a lot of jokes in this movie about Orlando. His name is Block, Dr. Block, and everybody calls him Dr. Black. That's a running joke in this movie. And one of the things that bothered me in this movie is nobody acts appropriate to the situations that they're in. And once we get to them, I will start addressing them.
Okay.
But that bothers me as well. They bullshit their way in to see the meteor.
Mm-hmm.
And they get down there, and there are cops taking pictures.
Oh, yeah.
With
they're
the meteor.
Doing funny poses and stuff. They're taking it very lightly.
And the tall cop, his name, Pat Kilbane, I believe.
He's from Mad TV?
Which Orlando Bloom was on as well.
Oh,
so they were
okay.
Both from Mad TV.
Orlando Jones,
I'm sorry.
Because I was, yes. Yeah, I actually have Orlando Bloom written down and crossed out, and then Jones, so.
Yes, so they were both from Mad TV. So David Duchovny and Orlando, they start chipping they start chipping at the meteor, and it starts bleeding, they say. And they take a piece off, and they bring it back to the college to examine.
Are you thinking, was Orlando Jones in Mad TV or?
No, Orlando Jones was in Mad TV.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay.
They may not have been on Mad TV at the same time, but they were both in on Mad TV.
Because when Mad TV comes to mind, it's, I think, Phil Hart, what's his name? Oh, Phil Lamar.
Yes, Phil Lamar and Orlando Jones were both on Mad TV at the same time.
I need to go back and watch some older episodes. Anyway.
I believe it was the first two. Orlando was on the first two seasons.
Okay, maybe that was
with
before.
Phil Lamar, yes.
Okay. So they get to the site. They bump into the firefighter because he's there because his car was crashed and he's complaining to the cops. And I thought that was a fun, like, the team's, just getting united. As a thing, but then they go into the cave and he kind of like Orlando Jones gets very confident and spits his game to, we're here to investigate and you need to get out of here kind of thing. So he schmarmies his way in to like getting the samples. It bleeds out. And then is that where they take a chunk of the rock and they take a lot of the fluid and that's, then
right.
They go back to the school?
They go back to the school and David Duchovny examines it while Orlando has to go. He is also the teacher. He is also the female volleyball coach.
Yeah.
And so he has to go coach a game. And while David Duchovny is examining, the fluid, the cells start multiplying on the slide in the microscope. at an alarming rate.
Oh yeah, it like shatters the little slide. And he does a little analysis. So, I thought this part was cool when he puts it into the computer. It had like the little like they had 10 base pairs of DNA, and they said like terrestrial life only had 4. So it was, you know, that was a fun little nerd moment.
Him using the computer will become important later.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to the volleyball game, and he gets to Orlando, and he's like, he basically said, he's spelling it out to Orlando. Orlando's not getting it until he basically says, these are aliens. And then he's like, oh. And then he's talking about the Nobel Prize and
we're going to be famous
and all that.
I did like the, because there was a little bit, there was a different energy when Orlando Jones was the coach. He was like yelling at the kids. He was like, two hands, use your two. Like he had a lot of fun expressions, and it was a good variance to his normal demeanor in the movie. But he did get excited. Also, they did something in the scene when they do reveal like, hey, these are aliens. It was almost reminiscent of like, because Orlando Jones played it very still, and then the background with the crowd was going nuts. So I thought that was a really great shot of just kind of a juxtaposition of like great, like a lot of stuff going on in the background and just very stillness from like how he played it. I thought that was fun.
Then we cut to a scene, Sean William Scott taking his firefighting test, and he is asleep on his feet.
Oh,
because
we did,
he was up all night.
There was a, we did one scene. They went back to the lab, and he's telling, what is it? David Duchovny is telling Orlando Jones, hey, look in here. It's single-celled organisms. We have life from outer space. And he looks in there, and he's like, how many cells do single-celled organisms have? And he there's a dumb, like, look back and forth. And then David Duchovny looks, and there's multicellular organisms. And what he said was it was two million years in a few a few hours. And so that kind of gives you a note of how fast these things are evolving. I thought that was good. They set the stakes. And then we go
then
back.
Then we cut to Sean William Scott taking his firefighting test, and he's asleep on his feet. And out of nowhere, he's on screen for like maybe 35 seconds, is Richard Mall, Bull from Night Court. Sean William Scott is asleep on his feet.
Yeah.
And he's like, get up on the ladder. And he starts to walk up he starts to run the ladder. He gets the hose. He hits himself in the junk with the hose. He fails the firefighting test. He has to go back to his job. He's a cowboy at this elegant golf course and resort. And by the way, he is driving the car that the meteor destroyed. Obviously it didn't destroy, but.
Yeah.
And obviously, if this was a real crime scene, or I guess it wasn't a crime scene, but it's like, why would you let him drive away in that piece? Anyway, he's driving around in this car, which should be undrivable.
Oh yeah, they even said it. They noted it. They were like, "We're going to impound your car. It's eminent domain. We have to take it for the case." And I guess he talked his way out of it, even though he's kind of a lower mentally capable person.
He's also charming in a way.
Okay.
Where he's also the kind of guy, come on. He doesn't portray a threat. He's just like, I just want my car so I can go and take my firefighter test. He's not hiding anything. And I guess it comes out that he's not hiding anything. It's like, look, I was here practicing to become a firefighter. The meteor hit. It flipped my car. I'm 7 minutes late. I need to get in my car. He's just telling the truth. And I guess that just worked on him.
Yeah, maybe firefighter, police, you know, camaraderie or something. But then, so after he fails that, I guess we cut back to kind of the site. And I was pleased because Kyle Gass is one of the, he's from Tenacious D. He was one of the side cops that was working with I forgot the name that you said, the other tall cop from TV.
Pat Kilbane.
Yeah. And so, but this is funny because they brought the whole class so they could get quote unquote extra credit in a bus. And then they have a giant winch.
Yes, they're on a quote unquote field trip. And they always do this. It's like, and they bought a winch, and David Duchovny is talking to the two big dumb guys. In movies like this, they always, and I know it's for comedic effect, but it never makes any sense rationally, is they always give the dumbest people involved an important job. It's like, okay, here's what's going to happen. I need you guys to back up the wench so we can pick up the meteorite. And they could have given that job to anybody on that field trip, but they gave it to the two dumbest guys, which you know they're probably going to fuck it up.
Oh, yeah.
You know that.
Did they? I don't even recall what happened, but they didn't. I don't think they got the meteorite.
They didn't. They never got the meteorite.
Because they got. Oh, yeah, that's right. They went into the cave, and I guess the it's created a different atmosphere because the life is generating the atmosphere it needs.
It's actually creating its own planet down there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they get there and they see a lot. There's a bunch of mushrooms down there. There's a lot of flatworms. They call them flatworms because the slutty chick is there and she's wearing these high heel shoes, you know, open-toed high heel shoes. So she's like, oh, I think there's something crawling on my feet. And it's just a bunch of flatworms. David Duchovny picks one up with a pair of tweezers and he brings it up and it dies. And he goes, ooh, it probably died from the oxygen. I'm mm-hmm. like, well, that's probably going to be important. That line is probably going to be important later.
And then so after, I guess they take a couple of life samples and I forget what causes them because we cut back to the pool, but they never have the rock. They never get the whole meteorite. They just never take get samples. The
rock. And I don't know, they never do why they couldn't get the rock. But we cut to lunch and that's where we see the flatworm starting to split.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they're reproducing. What's it called? The amoeba?
Asexual bacteria. Reproduction, mitosis.
Yeah, but it's called something. And I can't think. Anyway, they're splitting. So that's mm-hmm. how they're reproducing. And they're doing this at an alarming rate, once again, as we say. And now we cut to Sean Williams at the resort where he's a towelboy and he's getting chastised by his dick boss. He sees a bunch of worms
crawling out of the crack and stuff. And then he goes into the pool room.
And he follows them into like this maintenance room or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And apparently there's a tank. I guess, I don't know what it was. There was this tank in there.
It looked like the water recycle or chlorinated.
Something like that. But he sees this mutated turtle, for a better term, mm-hmm. in there. So that just shows us that, okay, the evolutionary process is still going on and it's still, you know, being hyped up at a very high rate.
And then we cut back to after they do a couple more experiments at the school. I guess they go back to the site
in
the military.
And now the army is there.
Yeah. And they are just kind of, they set up shop, they took everything, they set up a perimeter. And it was when they try to get in, Orlando Jones is still being his authority figure. And they're like, they're like, I'm this. And he's, you know, this doctor. And I guess one of the army or the military people hear his name. And then he starts freaking out and trying to pull out his gun to attack him.
Yes. And we'll find out why later. But once again, the thing with Orlando, I know my rights. I know my rights. And David, it's like, you got to learn how to talk to these army people. It's like, I'll talk to them with a, put my black foot up their ass. It's like, okay. It's just a total, you know, sassy, stereotypical black character. And it's just, they could have done so much more instead of making him. He's basically, even though he is a scientist, and even though Sean William Scott is supposed to be the dumb one, Orlando Jones basically comes off looking like a buffoon in this movie just because of the way they told him to play the character, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a little one-note-ish.
It's very one-note-ish, and it's very, I don't know, and it's not a good look either.
It's not necessary.
Like I said, it's a sassy black guy. It's just not a good look for the character.
Well, like you said, sometimes it, like some movies like really pile it on, and I think this one is a good example of them, you know, maybe overdoing that joke.
Well, and we're going to see it with another character. Well, overdoing.
Oh,
stereotypical. Overdoing it.
So they get access. They're taken to the general, and it is
they're taken to William Peck, the the general, not the head guy for the Environmental Textual Protect. No, a totally different character.
But this guy, he was in Monk, and he was also he was Buffalo Bill.
Lotion in the basket guy.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. What were you going to say? You started like the paint by numbers.
No, he's totally not Walter Peck from Ghostbusters. Totally different character. Yeah, he's totally not trying, you know, to discredit the good guys in there and take all the credit himself. Not a totally different character. Okay. He's in the army. Sure, they're both. Anyway, totally different character. Okay.
Have you ever read?
I don't know why you keep bringing this up, Will. You're beginning to piss me off. I'm keeping comparing this movie to Ghostbusters. Tell you.
I've read Save the Cat, so I'll divulge a little bit more at the end of the movie. But they get there. They meet Buffalo Bill, or the general, and then they also meet from the CDC. It was the. And I guess this is another one of those characters they piled on. She's the smart, clumsy lady.
The smart, beautiful, clumsy woman. Yeah. Yes.
And they, I mean, this is another character where they turned it up to 11. And she every moment except for the very end, she's bumping into something, dropping her books. It's one of those, it's kind of the same pattern that they did with Orlando Jones. But it was a good pretfall. The first one she did, she played her character well. But the general essentially goes, "It's ours now."
Well, that's Julianne Moore. Julianne Moore. Julianne Moore. And so it turns out that David Duchovny worked for the government, and he was released under suspicious circumstances. And the government was keeping tracks on him, so the government tracked his computer, and that's how they found out about all this. And of course, when Orlando Jones finds out that they were tracking his computer, he's like, all those women were over 18.
Is that the cringy line you were talking about?
No, no.
Or is there another one?
It's one of the cringy lines.
Oh, okay. So is this where it's revealed? No, it's later at the court. But so the general kind of takes over and then says, "Get out of here. You'll be noted in the asterisks of the reports, but it's ours now."
Then we go to court. So it's been 2 weeks.
Well, they go something else. They went back to the lab and found out like everything got broken into, all their data's gone.
No, I think that happens after the court case.
Okay.
Because they don't bring it up in the court case.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. That's
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where it comes out. He was a head of like a vaccine program,
which is kind of weird now talking about how side effects of vaccines. It was a silly scene back then, but a very poignant scene now after what's all happened about people not believing in vaccines and all that.
Yeah. So
it was a vaccine for anthrax.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, they were testing that and they had a whole list of things.
It was a whole laundry list of what impotence. Went wrong.
Dr. Kane, you were a top-level researcher at USAMRIID from 94 to 97, were you not?
Yes, that's correct.
And you were summarily dismissed in the summer of 1997. Any idea why?
My services were no longer required.
Uh-huh. So, in your opinion, your firing had nothing to do with an experimental anthrax vaccine that you developed and administered to nearly 140,000 U.S. soldiers in May of that year.
It may have been a factor. You'd have to ask the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
I'll make a note to do that. But for now, can you tell me what happened to the soldiers that were inoculated with your vaccine?
Well, none of them got anthrax, if that's what you're asking. Yeah.
What did they get?
Well, as with any new vaccine, there were certain side effects associated with it.
Could you be more specific?
Well, it was a wide range of things. It's very technical. I'd hate to waste the court's time getting into it right now.
Humor me.
Some debilitating stomach cramps, severe diarrhea, memory loss.
Yes. Go on. Any more symptoms?
Partial facial paralysis, temporary blindness, drooling, bleeding gums, erectile dysfunction, uncontrollable flatulence. I think that's it.
So that's why the guy at the beginning wanted to shoot him, because he's like, that was the worst month of my life. He obviously was one of the guys who got the anthrax shot, and his whole body just exploded on him.
And that makes, yeah, that's a good little, like, set. They did okay with some setups and some payoffs, I think, and that was one of them that, I mean, it's a big character development, because that's why he's a community college professor now, is because he's, you know, he's a disgrace where he was.
Now we go back to the college, and we find out that their offices have been broken into, and all their data has been stolen. The original part of the meteorite, the liquid that they brought back, all of it's been stolen.
And they say, we're not going to take this. No, we're not going to take this. We're not going to take this anymore. And then they, so I guess he has an old uniform that they...
Yes, he used to be a captain or a colonel. Used to be a captain or a colonel, one of those. They break into the site. He's dressed as a captain. Orlando Jones is dressed. Why, the black man got to be a private. Oh, for the love of God. it's just terrible. And so David Duchovny, and this is, he says, okay, what we're doing is highly illegal. I'm a captain. You're a private. Act like it. And for the love of God, he just can't act like, he does everything he's not supposed to do while acting as a private to draw attention to it.
Yeah, he doesn't change anything.
Doesn't change anything. When he specifically says, we could get captured and get up to 5 years in jail if we get caught. So just act...
professional.
Professional. And he can't do it for 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, because he's...
And it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse as the break-in continues.
Yeah. Because
that's just one of the things that bothers me. And it's one thing about being a proud black man. Not, I mean, that sounds awful coming from me. But it's like, okay, you're in this situation. You agreed to be in this situation. It's like, you have to act this certain way or we might get caught. And the thing that we've set out to do will be ruined if you don't act this way. And he just, 30 seconds in, he just starts acting like a buffoon again.
Well, comedy. I don't see you this passionate about Ghostbusters. So maybe there's something here that's really speaking to your heart.
That would be like, okay, like Ernie Hudson. They're about to shoot what is it?
Slimer. Slimer. Mushroom.
And he starts
marshmallow.
Zool. He's gonna start shooting Zool, and he starts dancing next to disco move right before they start to blast. It's like that's the equivalent of what happens here would be the equivalent of that. Of it's just ridiculous. Anyway. And by the way,
so they make their
way.
The
security in this place is awful.
Two people come from like way back in the field of some random thing. They just walk into the airlock. They make their way down.
Yeah, scientists, so I guess, are coming out. They put on these special suits, and they've gone down in the cavern. The meteor has formed its own ecosystem.
Yeah, it's flourishing. Life is everywhere,
and so they're basically in this alien world and they don't give a shit. They don't act amazed, they don't act scared. And like I said, so they get caught on camera. They're about to go in there, and like Orlando Jones is dancing like an idiot.
Oh, yeah, down the elevator.
Down the elevator and then, shaft. And they're like, who are these guys? And they're like, well, maybe they're doing a midnight tour
midnight
or whatever.
Cruise exhibition.
Yeah. But they get down there,
and
they're
shrugs.
Not. It's full of alien creatures. And David Duchovny is not fazed at all. And Orlando Jones is just making wisecracks left and right. It's like it doesn't affect him at all that they're basically standing in an alien world at this point.
I think it's just the fact that like David Duchovny is blinded by his mission. So he's very focused on making sure he gets in and gets out as Orlando Jones takes this, his character takes this very irreverently. Because, yeah, he doesn't act this goofy anywhere else in the movie. Not that I recall.
No. Back upstairs, one of the military guys gets Julian Moore and is like, you better take a look at this. Do you know who these two are? And it's Orlando and David. And for some reason, Orlando Jones has put together that Julian Moore wants to nail David Duchovny.
Very supremely forced. Yes. Like what? There's no, yeah, they had maybe 30. I don't know if there was a drop scene or a cut scene or something that they didn't, but this is one of those, like they're shoehorning in a relationship so that they can, you know, I guess widen the audience.
Like unlike Ghostbusters, you can see where Bill Murray is interested in Sigourney Weaver. And there's like, I mean, it's not drawn out through the entire tension. Movie, but you see the steps of the relationship. So here mm-hmm. is, to me, just a pinnacle of lazy writing, where they call Julian Moore to the screen, and Orlando Jones and David Duchovny just happen to be talking about her, and how how Orlando says, boy, she wants to nail you, and he's like, nah, she's just an unemotional ice queen. This is the equivalent of this lazy writing where she just happens to hear that part of the conversation out of all the time that they were down there. So,
oh yeah. And yeah, they're collecting rocks. They're like playing with alien, not playing with the aliens, but they're observing the aliens. And so, yeah, they were down there for, you know, maybe movie time, like 15, 20 minutes. But yeah, it's one of those like comedy situations where it's like, she's not supposed to hear this, but she did.
Right.
And they didn't think that they had the radios with one another and that nobody's monitoring it. Like,
it's just very sloppy writing. Well, anyway, Julian Moore and a couple of security guards come down to get him out. And while this is happening, a bug, a mosquito, a giant, a mutating mosquito gets into Orlando Jones' suit.
Yeah.
And gets into his body. And
then we rush to an emergency because he starts freaking out. And so they take him up back up top.
And this is like, I remember this scene. I've never seen, is this the first time you've seen this movie?
No, I've seen this before.
Okay, this is the first time I've seen it. I do remember the previews. And this was the scene from the previews where you can see the bug, like, under
crawling,
and I thought that was a nice skin. Effect where you can see the bug moving under his skin. That could have been like a creepier scene, a more guttural scene, if it wasn't just goddamn, just fucking joke after joke after joke. Everybody's talking over each other. It's just
There's
almost the exact same scene in The Mummy where a bug gets under his skin.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a more intense. That's the word I'm looking for. I know this is comedy, but this could have been an intense scene. Well, the way it ended, it couldn't have been an intense scene. But it's just joke after joke. It's like, we may have to cut off his leg. No, we can't cut off his leg. It's heading for his testicles.
It's going towards his
crotch.
Cut off
my leg! Oh, God. So...
Okay, Harry, cut him open. Let's get this thing.
Cut me open? That goes your Christmas gift, Judas.
All right, he's moving down his leg.
What do we do?
We might have to amputate.
Bone saw.
Whoa, Doc! Don't take the leg! Don't let him take my leg.
Is there anything else you can do? He thinks he's an athlete.
Yeah.
Wait, Dr. Luck.
It's heading for his testicles.
Take it! Take it! Take the leg!
Wait.
No.
It's going the other way.
All right, give me some forceps. I might be able to catch it in his colon.
How are you going in?
Rectally.
I'll get the lubricant.
There's no time for lubricant.
There's always time for lubricant!
All right, flip him.
Go.
Okay, here we go.
You gotta try to relax, buddy.
He's gonna be okay.
I'll shove this gurney up your ass. See if you relax, Ira.
Cheek spreader.
All right. I'm going in.
No! Don't clench. Don't clench.
You're so brave. You're so brave.
A little more.
No more!
A little deeper.
No! Deeper! Squeeze my hand. Squeeze it.
Almost there.
Open up. Open up.
Breathe.
Open up.
Breathe. Breathe.
I'm breathing.
Almost there.
You're there!
Oh, it's over. It's over.
Laughs per minute, buddy. Yes. Laughs per minute. That's what they're after.
And you know how they get the biggest... How do they get the biggest laugh of them all, Will?
The one that I wrote down was... what do we need? We need lube. And there's like, there's no time for lube. Because the mosquito... or creature works his way into his rectum.
The colon.
So they have to go through rectally to remove it.
They go into his butt to get out the bug.
Good old ass joke.
Yep. And then they...
And then, yeah, the jokes are stacked up one after the other.
And then the final joke is, I'd like some ice cream. What flavor? Doesn't matter. It's for my ass.
Maybe I'm more juvenile than you, Scott. I didn't at this moment because I was entertained. I thought some of the jokes were, you know, it's high energy and they're just pumping the jokes out. And then a good juxtaposition with Orlando Jones instead of all the mania and all the running around, just the whole shot becomes still again. And, you know, there's that one line. I just want some ice cream. He delivered that line good. And then the joke was, it's for my ass. And that was, you know, okay. And then we go back to the club where Sean Will Scott is as the bartender.
Yes. And his asshole boss is on his case again.
He's berating him. Yeah.
But then his asshole boss starts flirting with this woman at the country club. Then we cut to, like, the golf course, and he's setting up this blanket on the 18th green or something, or one of the holes.
Next to the lake.
And he opens some champagne, and it gets on his pants. He's like, oh, that's going to be a stain. And he walks over to the water trap, and he dabs a handkerchief and starts cleaning off his pants. The woman starts yelling his name. She's like, he's like, I'm over here. And while all this is happening, the sea turtle or whatever, the mutated turtle has gotten into the water and attacks him and pulls him into the water. And she screams.
We just see a water explosion.
Yeah. And she screams and she runs back and she's like, something's eaten, whatever his name is. And
everybody gasps.
Except for Sean William Scott. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. That's terrible.
Jackass. And then after the death of that guy, the doctor and the CDC lady, David Duchovny, and I'm sorry, Juliana is her name. They have a heart to heart at the table and they're like, well, you could have been so much. You could have been bigger. You could have been better. Like, what'd you do? Why'd you do this? And they, you know, they kind of sit down and they actually have a moment to bond.
Right.
But I don't think it was very deep.
No, it wasn't very deep. And I guess it's just something to get all of us on the page that we want to see these two characters get together.
Yeah. Very contrived.
Then we go back to the next day. David and Orlando, they pull up at the college where they work. And we see Sean's car there. Sean William Scott has... They had... chased the creature out of the water into the sand trap, and it died. So Sean...
And this was just told to us. It wasn't shown.
It wasn't shown, because that would have been exciting.
Yeah.
well, you know what? I'm going to... That was sort of a cheap shot. We get some exciting shots later.
He throws the body. And he had access to the body. There's a murder on the green, and one guy... Yeah, somebody died... And so he just gets to, I guess he said, did he chase it or did people chase it?
People chased it. So what normally would have happened is somebody would have called animal control and they would have come and taken the body of the whatever it was and also called an ambulance or whatever for the guy. I don't know. I mean, they don't say if they found him, if the thing ate him completely. You just never know. And I know it's like, we don't want to get caught up too much in the minutia, but there is really no reason for this civilian to have this body of this creature to bring to the college.
Yeah. Anyway, so he brings it and throws it on the table, and the group is reunited. And then I guess they kind of study it a little bit, but then we cut to a random house. I don't know who these people, this is the first time
they're there. It's just a random house. Yes. It's these four ladies.
And they're having together, you know, they're drinking wine or having tea or something.
Book club or tea, you know, and they're drinking, like you said, and they're drinking wine, and one's like, you've got a...
It's infestation.
Yes. And they go to the closet, and they open the closet, and it's an
frog
thing. It's an alien with a sad face, and the woman...
The big
eyes. I don't
know
if you recognize the woman who actually wants to go to pet it. That's the woman who plays Randy Quaid's wife in the Vacation movies, in Christmas Vacation and the original Vacation.
Okay, I did not know that.
And so it's this creature with a big sad face. You know, they think, oh, it's a possum or something.
It's having trouble breathing.
Yes, it's having trouble breathing. Yeah. They think
that, it's that dog doesn't look good.
It's like, oh, that's not a dog. They think it's some kind of reptile, you know. And she's like, oh, it's scared. And I'm like, okay, so the sweet looking animal, she's going to go pet it. And the exact, you know, and then its mouth opens up a la Alien, and it has a mouth inside its mouth, and it bites her. I'm like, well, wow, nobody saw that coming. one of the women go to get a gun, and he pulls it, but it slumps over and dies. And at this point, the worms are mutating at a giant rate. However, they have not adapted to the Earth's atmosphere yet. They can't.
But they
can't.
Getting longer and longer.
Yes, they're beginning to live longer and longer. But eventually, they have all started dying. But as you said, they are living longer and longer. And David Duchovny realizes that, and he's going to try to convince everybody later. But we'll get to that.
Yeah. We cut out after the lady gets bit, and then the frog rhino keels over from suffocation. We cut back to the hotel of the CDC lady.
Right.
And she's still clumsy and kind of like she gets stuck in the door. She's getting dropped off. And the David Duchovny's character followed her to her hotel.
No, he knew he was there. So he knew.
Oh, that's right.
He was
waiting for her.
And this is where he's like, yeah, look, you got to take me seriously. We got to kill him now while we can. And they have this back and forth. It's like, okay, I'll talk to the general. I'll see what I can do. She gets into the elevator, and he says, just one more question. It's like, do you think you could ever like me? Or something like that. And
something very forced.
Very forced.
Something you would never say.
Something that
to anybody.
A human being would never say to another. An adult, an eight-year-old, would say that to another eight-year-old. Do you like me? But not, and it wasn't, and maybe if it was done in a flirty way, you know, like, do you think you could ever like a guy? You know, it's like, but it was just done matter-of-factly. And like you said, it was very, very forced. And
as the elevator's closing.
And he goes,
and she
oh,
smiles.
Yeah, she's mine. Or something like that. It's like, okay.
Yeah. So he tried to convince her. And then we cut to dinner. Oh, yeah, they're in the diner. And everybody's kind of sitting together.
They're in the diner. And this is where the other line. And even though he's joking, and here's something I see this in movies all the time, and it happens here in a couple of scenes where these grown men are around a woman and she takes off her shirt, and these grown men, like, oh, so it's going to happen here in a second. Sean William Scott goes to Orlando Jones. He's like, oh, so, and this is 2001. When this happens. So this is not like, sometimes you can blame a movie line, like, okay, it was the 70s or the 80s. This is 2001. Yeah. When he says, do you ever change?
Oh, yeah.
with the female team. He's saying this to Orlando Jones, and Orlando Jones jokingly but kind of creepily says, oh yeah, I change with them. Sometimes I even shower with them. And this, like I said, even though this is over 20 years ago, this is still the 2000s. It's like, you can't be saying that.
And you got teacher-student relations. Right. They are at a college, because so adults are adult. Okay. But it's still predator behavior.
Still okay. If it's... Even it's a totally 100% wrong if these are all adult women. But not only are these not adult women, these are, quote, these are still children. Yeah. And he is an authority figure to these children. It's just...
Yep.
So they're all sitting there eating, and then all of a sudden, we get introduced to Sarah Silverman. She's in this movie for 2 minutes.
And she has history with... Because the doctor has sat down.
Yes, David Duchovny has sat down, and we find out that it's Sarah Silverman is his ex-girlfriend, but she is now dating the tall cop. It's something about stealing shirts. It's like when she left, she stole his shirt. This scene is... The only reason this scene is in here is because on the radio, the cop gets a call for... An animal control. The animal control stuff comes into play. I don't know why it didn't come into play earlier. But so he gets a call and they follow the cop to where it goes. But we have this drawn out scene where apparently Sarah Silverman left him and took his shirts, and she's wearing one of his shirts. So she's like, you want your shirt back? I'll give you your shirt back. And she starts to take off his shirt, and like Orlando Jones and Sean William Scott are just like, what, blah, blah. And it's like in movies, all these adult men go crazy when they see a woman's... It's like, once again, if you're a teenager and you see boobs, it's a big deal. You're grown men. Yeah. You've seen boobs. You've seen them. Boobs are easy to see. It's like...
Well, isn't comedy too, like, one of the tropes of comedy is men acting adolescently, or like, you know.
It is. You know, all men want is sex. So whenever they see a pair of boobs, they're like, wow. But it works better, you know. That's like the teenage sex comedies, where they're just coming into their sexuality. They don't have a lot of experience around women. So they are going to freak out when they see a pair of boobs. It's just like you've...
But according to the story so far, Orlando Jones showers with his team. Or at least, so he should be very, you know, used to it.
Well, anyway, the scene goes nowhere. The cop gets a call. He has to...
Oh, the cop jumps up, stops Sarah Silverman, and said, we can, you know, he steps up and has confidence in the scene. He's like, she can borrow it for another day. And they kind of like agree, and they go off. And that's when the radio chimes in. So then we cut to after the announcement of it's a 1092. And Sean Will Scott knows what a 1092 is. He's like, oh, that's an animal attack. So, you know, his intelligence, you know, went up a point. And then we cut to the house that the frog rhino died at.
They talk about what happens, and Sean William Scott has gone outside. You guys want to see this? And we go out back, and there is like a dinosaur graveyard of all these flying amphibians, and they're all dead. Ooh. Orlando Jones has put it together. There's just a system of caves where the meteor hit. It's right in the middle. So these things are crawling out through all these caves, and that's how they're getting to where they're getting. While this happens, one of the dinosaurs sort of springs back to life, barfs out another dinosaur, and then dies. And then this flying dinosaur comes out of its sack, and it is able to breathe air, and it flies away. David Duchovny knows this immediately. He goes, it's able to breathe air! So he knows it immediately. And I don't know how he would know that. I guess when it flew away, he would know that. But he knew that beforehand. And it flies away. It goes into a mall, which is, wow, you don't see that very often. It starts wreaking havoc, and the three of them follow it to the mall.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. And then we see a scene where they go into a sporting goods store, they break the glass, and they all take rifles, and they all start, they load the rifles, and they're going to hunt this thing down. Mall full of people. They're the only three that have this idea?
Yeah. That no other authority figures are there. Nobody.
Not even, I mean, this was a packed mall. And nobody else thought. Now, I will say that most of the people in the mall evacuated, which I give the movie points for that. That is something that they would have done. But while this is happening, there's a little woman in a dressing room, and she's stealing clothes. So she's putting on like 8 layers of clothes. She keeps hearing this.
Something gently knocks on the door.
She's like, I'm in here.
Not knocks, but it like rattles.
I'm in here. And then she finally swings it open. And of course, it's the dinosaur.
And it picks her up and kind of like flies her around the mall a little bit. And she's screaming. And I guess the guys are running around with the loaded shotguns trying to chase down the beast. And it drops her off somewhere. And the joke was, this was some kind of severe security measure. And she's like, I'll never steal again.
Yeah, she thought this was mall security. So it's a really weird scene. They start chasing the thing through the mall. And then they lose it. And then Orlando Jones is like, well, you want to give up and go home? What the fuck? It's in a mall. No, unless it has crashed out of the mall, which you would have heard, it's still in the mall. And even though malls are a big place, you can find that thing if it's still in the mall.
Comedy.
But then...
I think Sean Will Scott gets bored and he finds a microphone. There was a little bit of a setup before that, like when he's running around, he tries to call out to it. But this, he gets a microphone and he's like, I'm going to try my idea again. So he starts making like bird noises and animal noises, and that doesn't work. And they're looking at him like, you're an idiot. And then he starts singing.
You Are So Beautiful.
Yeah, that's right. And then certain notes that he's hitting actually causes the beast, while it's flying around the mall, to turn around and go, oh, I need to go investigate. So he finishes the song and the beast comes back and kind of flies around, and it flies up to where David Duchovny is, and he unloads the shotgun and blasts it in the back, and it just crashes, and they almost successfully killed the beast. And then I think they walk up to it and they're like, victory, boys. And they, it starts to turn a little bit and they blast it again. And they're like, now it's dead.
Yes.
White meat or dark meat?
Yeah, white meat. And then we get this extended scene of them driving.
Celebrating
to play that funky music, White Boy. And I swear, okay, it was like it was a close up on them. And I'm like, if we pull back and the dinosaur is tied to the roof of the car like a deer, I'm going to scream. And they didn't do that.
Oh.
Thank God they didn't do that.
I thought that would have been awesome. That would have been fun if they're bringing it to the military or something. I mean, it wouldn't make sense because they don't want to help the military.
Well, but that's where they're going, because the next scene, an hour, 7 minutes into the movie, Dan Aykroyd arrives.
Yay.
And he plays the governor. And it has nothing
really
like
well.
The governor from the Ghostbusters who wants the, he's afraid. Nothing. Totally different character. Nothing like the governor from Ghostbusters. Totally different. He has sort of these southern affectations in his speech. He's not playing it with a southern drawl, but he has a lot of southern sayings. I like the way he played the governor. They try to explain it to him in scientific terms, and he's like, "No, I don't get it in scientific terms. Explain it to me as you would a normal person." And they do.
What I really want to know is how bad this thing is.
It's bad, Governor. Now, according to the new ground sensors and the satellite thermal scans, they indicate a potential problem.
I don't know how to read all this. What kind of a problem? Now, somebody, please. Take this ugly bag of snakes and lay them out straight for me.
Please allow me, Governor.
And you are?
Dr. Allison Reed.
Nadia.
How do you do? Carla, would you mind?
Okay, the red markings in these projections indicate the growth of the alien ecosystem. Unless we do something immediately, we will lose Glen Canyon in 3 days.
Great merciful Christ.
In a week, the rest of Arizona, then the entire Southwest. In 2 months, the United States officially belongs to them, and we are extinct.
You've got to be shitting me.
Come on, admit it. You're glad to see us. Huh?
I, for one, am glad to see you. Call the MPs, have these men arrested.
Hey, we just blew a giant alien bird out of a department store. We're covering up your mess. Governor, Dr. Ira Kane, I'm the chairman of the science department at the Glen Canyon Community College, and this is my associate.
Harry Phineas Block, adjunct professor of geology. Voted for you.
Wayne Gray, took some chemistry in high school.
Now, you two gentlemen are the original discoverers of the phenomena. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, they are, and they're also responsible for the mess we're in right now.
Ooh, here we go.
They broke into the contained area a few days ago and breached our safety procedures.
Unwittingly causing the dissemination of alien organisms outside the secured area.
Liar, liar, pants on fire!
Criminal charges are in order here.
This is bullshit!
All right, shut up, all of you. Listen, my state out there is being overrun by vicious aliens. Now, you're all supposed to be the experts. I want to know right now, and I want to know it quick. How the hell are you supposed to deal with this?
And he seems genuinely concerned with the Arizona and with the people in his state. He's not a phony politician in this. He
actually cares.
He actually cares. I think he plays the character very, very well. So the general's there, and Julian Moore is there, and Dan Aykroyd is there, the governor. And then, of course, the three show up for some reason.
And in the middle of the transition from the governor getting there and then them getting there, they had news reporters. And I think they had like 3 or 4 news reporters starting to spread the news that, hey, look out, some strange stuff is happening. So now the community's getting to know, oh, there's aliens. Not aliens, but like weird creatures and weird situations going on. But they're in the war room, so to speak. We cut back to the war room at the site. And they're showing how the evolution has expanded, and then they project the continued expansion. And so I think, what did they say, 3 days and it will be the whole United States?
3 days it'll be all of Arizona, and like 2 weeks it would be all the United States.
There you go, yep.
Now,
so we raised the stakes.
Yes. And while this is happening, they call the general out of the room, and they look down in the biodome or whatever it is, and now they have
Pauly Shore's in the background.
Yes. Well, speaking of Pauly Shore, they have mutated or evolved into primates.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So now there's a couple of, like, a la 2001 A Space Odyssey gorilla men down there. They deactivate the cameras. They know what cameras are. I don't know how, but they know what the cameras are. They knock out the cameras. And they get into the war room from the biodome, or whatever they're calling it. And
super jump.
And they start attacking everybody. And once again, it's like, this could have been, you know, you could have had a little tension here. Like I said, I know it's a comedy, but you could have built a little tension with this, with what's going to happen. But, you know, David tries to punch. Ow! Ow!
Yeah, super strong.
Yeah. And Sean William Scott ends up getting a gun and shoots one of them. And I thought there was going to be a moment where he kills it. And was it an ape or was it a man? It was in the process of evolution. You know, maybe a scene where he thinks to himself, did I just kill a man? But it's just totally glossed over. It's just like,
yeah, he just hands the gun to the other guy.
And then Dan Aykroyd goes, whatever you got to do, do it. And the general's idea is, we are going to napalm the fuck out of them. We're going to evacuate the city, and we're going to napalm right where the meteor hit.
Because they're going to scorched earth. They're going to just take it out.
Yep.
During that, the Creozoids, I think Dan Aykroyd had one moment of, like, his, you know, he's speaking in a higher
like, I guess, diction. And he has a moment where he talks to the general. He's like, I don't want these Kreozoids taking over the thing. And that just reminded me of how you enjoy when he has, like, you know, he does his technical speak.
Yeah.
He didn't go off too much, but, you know, he threw in a couple of words there. And then, so the, I guess the CDC lady, she got fired?
No, she quit. She didn't want to be there. She quit,
okay.
So the CDC lady, Julianne Moore, she's with our three heroes now, and they drive back to the community college, and now the news is out that the world is ending, so everybody is partying, and I don't know.
Well, also,
how people would react.
The thing that was strange is at the end of the scene where she got fired and she joins the group, like the military just let her walk off with like alien samples.
Yeah, she's like, I got,
she stole it or something.
Samples.
It's just like,
like I said, the security in this is brutal. But then
you're right.
They get back to the community college and they have the original specimen. And once again, this is they couldn't have found a better way to do this. So Orlando Jones, he starts smoking, and David, it's like, why are you smoking?
Well,
it's like,
world's ending.
You know, no point, you know, world's ending, no point. And he flicks the match into the Petri dish, and then the creature just expands.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, fire makes it expand. They're going to napalm
it.
No. So if they napalm this creature, they are just going to make things so much worse. And this is, and I'll admit, I'm not smart enough to have followed the next part. Julianne Moore is wearing a t-shirt that has a periodic table on it. And David Duchovny is looking at it and he's like, well, okay, so we're made of this and this is like an arsenic is our, that'll kill us.
Poison.
If that's our poison.
It's the pattern.
If the aliens are made of this and it was, what did they say it was? It was
selenium based life form.
So they go selenium. Well, okay, so here's a part.
They're
like
nitrogen based.
Yeah.
And selenium kills them.
Selenium kills them. And David, and this is when the two fat dumb guys come into the room with them. And it's like, we, you know, then they brought beer. And I'm like, okay.
Because everybody's partying
right.
And
I
end
thought,
of the world party.
Is the beer going to kill them? I thought that, okay, that might be clever. They spilled the beer and that kills them. But it doesn't. Julianne Moore is wearing the periodic table t-shirt he's like, take off your t-shirt. And the two dumb kids, like, yeah, okay, I can see them wanting to see boobies because they're young and
they're college
dumb.
Kids. They're dumb. Yes. They're, yeah.
Anyway, they figure out that selenium might kill them. They don't know for sure. And then the two dumb guys go, well, that's the main ingredient in Head and Shoulders. And they go, how do you know? It's like, can't you see our hair is flake-free?
Selenium. That could be the answer. I'm looking at the periodic table on your t-shirt here, and I'm seeing this pattern emerge. Take off your shirt. I'll show you.
Yes.
No, I don't think so.
All right, look. We are a carbon-based life form.
You pulling Dr. K?
We moved down here, and you found our poison, arsenic.
Mm-hmm.
But the aliens are nitrogen-based, right? You make the same move, down and over, and where do you find yourself?
Selenium.
Selenium. Could be as lethal to them as arsenic is to us.
And with their metabolic rates, it'll kill them fast.
Okay. Selenium. How much do we need?
500 gallons could do it, should do it.
500 gallons?
Yeah.
I hate to be a buzzkill, but where are we going to get that at 2 a.m?
No problem.
Yeah, we can get that.
Head and Shoulders.
The dandruff shampoo?
Yeah, that's the stuff. The active ingredient is selenium sulfide.
Oh. How do you know that? You don't know anything.
Haven't you noticed how shiny and flake-free our hair is?
Best commercial ever.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to that, too.
Yeah.
And then Sean William Scott goes, I have the perfect vehicle for it. So what happens is they go and they buy all the Head and Shoulders on the shelves, and somehow Sean William Scott is able to get a fire truck. I don't know how. He failed it.
He's not even on the force.
He's not even on the force. And what happens is they fill the fire truck up with the shampoo. And they go, okay, so the next morning, they're going to napalm that thing at noon. How they know it's at noon, I don't know. But it's like, they're going to napalm it at noon. If we get there beforehand, we can kill it before they napalm it. But we find out that everything is ahead of schedule, so the general is going to napalm it early. And at that point, right before they napalm it, Dan shows up again as the governor. And he wants to see it. And oh, so this is really the only line in the movie that got a chuckle out of me. He sits down in a chair and he goes, I'll have a pair of spy glasses and a cocoa. Okay, and that got a chuckle out of me. So
I also like he pulled a power move and he was very in character. He was like, "You keeping that seat warm for me?" Right before that line. So it was a fun, like, just he was in his element.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd did really good in this
movie. Yeah, he did.
I thought he... But yeah,
and
that,
you know,
that line
and him and
too,
Ivan are friends. Like, I'm sure he did that as a favor to him because
for the hot chocolate.
Because
line
his name is nowhere near the credits, so you would not know that he's in this movie. You know, just from the advertising.
Yeah, he wasn't billed.
No, not
as
no.
a main draw.
Not even as a not even in the credits at all. I don't think he's in the credits on the posters. But anyway, they get the fire truck in there. They're about to spray the environment with Head and Shoulders, but then the napalm goes off. They're started early. As expected, the napalm, first of all, it looks good. The general and the general's assistant and the governor, they see these big explosions. It's like, okay, everything's gone off without a hitch.
We got it. Barbecue complete.
Barbecue complete. But then, as we see in the atmosphere, it's mutating the creatures all into one giant creature. So what's happening is, the napalm is killing the higher life forms. However, the lower life form is the one that's growing. So it just becomes one anthropomorphic, just giant, one-cell creature that's just huge. It's a giant, giant, one-cell creature. They realize, once again, it's going to start splitting. So we're just going to be overrun with these giant one-cell creatures. And then our gang is just like, well, we're still going to try the shampoo. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
they're going to,
no,
you know what? They're
going to,
it's like, we're going to come full circle. They're going to put it in its butt. And that's exactly what they do.
Oh, yeah.
They drive around under the creature until they find the anus. They do a fart joke. The thing farts on them. They stick the fire hose up the creature's butt. Turns it on, pumps all the shampoo into the creature. And while all this is happening, they're getting covered in what I'm guessing is a combination of shampoo and alien feces.
Well, and probably like melting cells.
Yes.
But it's gross.
But at one point, Orlando Jones gets sucked up into the anus. And David Duchovny is like, you know, stop fighting it. Stop kicking. And he pulls him out. And it's just, so here, and it's like, okay, you're trying to destroy this giant creature. And it's like, don't ever tell anybody you got stuck in its butt. It's like, that's okay. You know, you say that afterwards, after everything has calmed down, that's when that line would be funny.
Yeah.
It's like everything's calmed down. You're being congratulated. The governor is shaking your hand. Yada yada yada. And then you're like, "Don't ever tell anybody I was in its butt." They drive out. They all get into the fire engine and they drive out. And it explodes, and slime rains down on top of them. Not like the ending of Ghostbusters, where a marshmallow comes down on all the city and all of me. It's totally not like that. Totally different.
Completely different.
Totally different. Not like the end of Ghost. This ending of them, all our main characters being covered in slime. Totally not like Ghostbusters. Totally different. And then the scene where our main character is covered in goop and the lady kisses him. Totally not like Ghostbusters. Totally not like Ghostbusters. After she wipes the slime off of him.
Yeah, who knows? And this is alien life, like residual. So who knows what you're getting into your orifices and how that would affect, you know, if you're making out with all that like alien slime, you're going to get some cross contamination. Going back right before they went to go do the critical thing, the only reason I bring this up is it like solidified the relationship. The CDC lady and David Duchovny are having one last heart to heart before they go kill the creature. And she's like, I would have rocked your world, you know? And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, you said I was an ice queen, but I would have done right by you. And though it was a sweet line, she said, I would have rocked your world. And he was like, hey, you already have, like, I appreciate you and stuff. But that was like one more bonding moment before all the action stuff happened. And then we cut back to they kiss, this creature's destroyed. And then do they go right
off the general? He's covered in goo. And then Dan Aykroyd is presenting each one. And Julianne Moore's like, this is your big moment. You don't want to miss. They basically, while Dan Aykroyd is bringing everybody up, they basically run off the fuck. In a fire truck.
And again, with alien slime on there. And they didn't shower. They didn't. I mean, they looked pretty clean, but, you know, that you don't want things getting in anywhere.
But Dan Aykroyd brings up Sean William Scott, and he's like, I talked to the head of the fire department. You're in the fire department now. He brings up Orlando Jones. Orlando Jones makes a Newt Rockne speech. We just tackle them one alien at a time. Then he's going to bring up David Duchovny and Julianne Moore. And, you know, Orlando's like, they're basically boning. And it's like, oh.
Oh.
And then you think that's the end of the movie. But you see this creature flying. And then the movie ends with the three of them doing a Head and Shoulders. So you know Head and Shoulders had, I don't know if they donated money or whatever.
Tons of money.
But they do, the movie ends with them doing a Head and Shoulders commercial.
If that's not product placement, I don't know what is.
And that was it.
The whole movie
was. I didn't watch the entire credits. I don't know if there was an after credits thing with.
I didn't look.
So if you're watching this, if you're listening to this and you've seen Evolution, let us know if there's an after credit scene where they bait a sequel. There was no sequel to this. You thought it was a good movie. I thought it was boring. I probably would not watch this movie again. I loved Dan Aykroyd's performance. I thought he did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it shot well. There's a lot of great shots in the movie. Just the way the characters act in this movie, it just rubbed me the wrong way. So
can I ask, is it just based on your anger that it was very much like, it was essentially a knockoff of Ghostbusters?
No, because it's not like these beats are just. And I actually really didn't put it together until the end. I'm like, when they were covered with crap, I'm like, holy, this is Ghostbusters.
It's just like Ghostbusters. Wait a minute. All of it's like Ghostbusters.
And then I went back, because at the end, I'm like, oh, the ending is like Ghostbusters. But I'm like, wait a minute. That's like Ghostbusters. And that's like Ghostbusters. And that's like Ghostbusters. So
there's a book I read called Save the Cat, and essentially what it is like there's a beat sheet that you go down, and a lot of movies mirror each other or have a lot of similarities and very similar beats because it's like a formula that they use. For example, like Planes, Trains, Automobiles and Due Date are very, very similar. They're not the same movie, but they share a lot of common ground. So maybe it's one of those situations like somebody was with Ghostbusters and they were like, hey, we could just do the same
thing. Well, Ivan Reitman directed aliens. Ghostbusters and this movie.
So
that's why it's so, if it was somebody else, I could understand, but you're basically remaking your own movie. That's what's strange to me. I understand ripoffs and I understand beats and I understand there's only so many plots you can do, but this, you are basically reshooting your own movie with just slight tweaks in it. How could that be creatively fulfilling for you?
Stimulating, $2 million or however much he got paid was, you know, pretty good incentive. I don't think he got paid that much, but
sure he did. He was a big name at the time. And it's like, and this was David Duchovny was a TV star. And Orlando Jones was a team. I think this was they were trying to launch these guys' movie career, which
into
didn't happen.
Careers. Yeah.
But anyway, it's not my type of movie.
To antithesize.
I thought it was boring.
I think maybe it's like a little bit more of a popcorn flick, like Cocaine Bear or Snakes on a Plane. It's one of those movies where, it's not the best movie, but you get the concept and they play with the concept.
I think if David Duchovny was a little wackier, I mean, I know we get Orlando Jones being wacky, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll just... I think it's maybe if it's one of those things where it's like on TV or you're just, it's playing in the background, I wouldn't turn it off. And when we said we would do this, I got a little excited. So I appreciate it for some of its points.
All right. Will, where can we find you?
On Instagram, Gnome on the Go with periods in between each word. That's a good hub to find me.
All right, so I've got something very, very painful planned for Will next time, so he is going to regret making me watch this movie.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you heard me.
Oh, no. Oh, goodness.
Yes.
Well, I can't wait to find
out. All right, once again, Will, thank you for doing this, and we'll see everybody here next time on the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
The Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
General, you have my full support to do whatever you need to do. However much firepower it takes, you can melt the whole place down to beaded glass if that's what it takes. Just get these hell-blown creozoids out of my state.
Thank you, Governor. I'll be ready to go by noon tomorrow.
Good, sir. Where have you two been?
I was getting out of the way.
This has been a Cross the Streams Media Podcast.
Fighting the alien menace can be tough work.
And so is keeping your hair clean, shiny, and dandruff-free.
So it's a good thing that we always keep a healthy supply of
Head and Shoulders around the house.